Ken Forrester, Executive Director at Momenta. Welcome to our Digital Thread podcast, produced by, for, and about digital industry leaders. In this series of conversations, we capture insights from the best and brightest minds in digital industry. They're executives, entrepreneurs, advisors, and other thought leaders. What they have in common is, like our team at Momenta, they are deep industry operators. We hope you find these podcasts informative. And as always, we welcome your comments and suggestions. Good day and welcome to episode 222 of our Momenta Digital Thread podcast series. Today, I'm pleased to host Jonas Hellgren, CEO of Appirio, the industry leader in data quality solutions. Momenta has just led the recent Series A investment round in Appirio. Jonas is a senior executive with a passion and proven strategy for building and growing high-tech companies that revolutionize the industries they are in. He has over 20 years of experience in operations and product for mobile and digital advertising, managed security services, consulting, and enterprise IT, and a deep experience base with developing partnerships and integrating companies after successful M&A transactions. Jonas, welcome to our Digital Thread podcast today.
Hey, thanks, Ken. It's great to be here. I look forward to this interview and look forward to sharing a little bit about my personal professional story with you, and of course, talk about what we're up to here at Appirio as well.
Excellent. Looking forward to it. And I know it'll be a great conversation, as you and I have had plenty of chance to talk about some good topics and such in here. So first and foremost, we call this the Digital Thread podcast. Of course, it referring to, one's individual digital thread, if you will. So what would you consider to be your digital thread?
Yeah. So I thought a little bit about that. And interestingly enough, it actually made me think some things through in order to prepare for this podcast that maybe I haven't thought so deeply about, but there's a couple of things that have kind of followed me through my career that really have sort of shaped the way I think about things and the way I make my career decisions along the way. And so I'll share a little bit about that and how I see that. I think the bottom line for me, is that my digital thread is that I'm really attracted to building new things and learning hard things, no matter what these things are. And that's really shaped how I've decided my career decisions along the way. So I started my career as a software engineer after I graduated, actually back in 1990 with a master's degree in computer science. As a kid, I was really attracted to computers and the amazing things you could do with computers. Of course, back in the early 1980s, when I was a kid, nobody really had a computer. But in 1984, I came across a special feature in wireless world about building how to build a microcomputer. It was based on the Zilog Z80 chip, which I don't think is around anymore, but it had a 64K of RAM and an operating system and a floppy drive. And I was 16 years old at the time. And so, I had basically no clue what I was doing, but I was determined to figure it out. It was a new thing for me. I decided I was going to try to learn how to build this computer. So this whole project really consumed me for about a year, pretty much. And I got the blueprints for the circuit boards, etched and drilled the circuit boards, and off I went to build this computer. Had to run around, deliver newspapers to earn money, to buy hardware, taught myself assembly language coding in the process of building this machine, and eventually got to the point where I turned this thing on that I spent a year building, and it turns out it didn't work. Nothing happened. So then I went to borrow some equipment. I had to learn how to use an oscilloscope, taught myself how to use that, and troubleshoot this computer of mine, and just a few weeks later, I was successfully able to make this computer to run. And that was really defining, for me. I used this computer for the next couple of years for almost everything. I taught myself to program in C, Modular 2, Fortran, Pascal, whatever other procedural languages there were around at the time. And I remember the last time I used this computer was to write my job application for my first job out of college. That was for a software developer position at Anderson Consulting, actually, which then eventually became Accenture. And so that became my first job. That was in 1990. And that was the last time I used this computer. I never turned it on again. I still have it, actually, in my office here. And I think about often how building that computer at that age, when nobody else did that, really had such a profound impact on the rest of my career. So that was really the beginning of, I think, the two thematic threads that have guided my career decisions really ever since. And that is what I said up front, which is that I love to build things. I would love to build new things, and I love to learn new hard things. And if it's not about building new things and if it's not hard, then it's not that interesting to me. And I think I didn't think about that at the time, but now when I look back on my career, then it's pretty clear how I've been making my decisions. Every time I look at a new professional challenge or taking it, jumping into a new project, I always have the same two ingredients in mind, so to speak. Build something new and learn something hard that I didn't know how to do before. So that's really been it for me. And it was never, and it still never is for me, about title or money or career or anything like that. It's really just about learning and building. And I think for me, the rest follows. So that then really ultimately led me toward the career that I chose, which is to, work in high-tech startups, right? Because that's what startups do, build things and learn things. And the specific industry that I worked in really wasn't that important to me. That's why I've been involved in all sorts of different things, from web development in the late 90s to cybersecurity to mobile advertising technology, and then most recently building Aperio to chart a new path in data quality for industrial data. So yeah, that's my personal digital thread, Ken, and those are the key themes that have been there for me throughout my career, really.
What a great story. And actually, that pattern really does represent, or at least I think really kind of represent, the things that you've done since then, the success you've had. So it's very interesting. I was actually quickly typing up. I thought it might have been the Altair, but then I realized that was an 8080 processor. So you've even did something previous to that, if it was a Z80 processor.
Yeah,
so.
Whatever you do,
hang on to it, because those early PCs are worth quite a bit these days. So
it's right in front of me. I don't think it works anymore. Sometimes I think about trying to see if I can turn it on. But.
There you go. Well, maybe that's your retirement sitting right in front of you. So it's interesting. We often talk about serial entrepreneurs, but few of them have the track record of exits that you do. So, Guardiant to VeriSign in 2004, $145 million deal. JumpTap to Millennial Media in 2013, $225 million deal. And then more recently, Vaultive to CyberArk in 2018. What's your secret for finding and developing such winners?
Well, I'm sure there are many people with much greater exits than I had, and there are many who didn't. And I don't know that there's really a secret recipe for that, right? I'm sure there's a lot of luck and timing involved in all of that too. But the way I think about it really is, you look for things aren't necessarily winners when you find them. They could become winners though. So you look for projects that have the necessary ingredients for becoming winners, and then provided that you're able to execute and make them winners in the end. For me, that's really been about a couple of different, two or three different things. I look for things that, first of all, are easy to understand, has a really clear use case. If I can explain it to my children, then that means it's easy to understand. The second thing is unique solutions. Differentiated from other things out there. It's not just the me too, in a sea of competitors that basically do the same thing and you're just trying to do it a little bit better. And then thirdly, that it targets a potentially big industry opportunity. Oftentimes when you start off, there isn't really a market out there at all yet, but you're expecting there to be one. And so what I try to think about is, how big can that opportunity become? So, if I apply that to JumpTap, for example, I joined JumpTap, that was a mobile advertising company back in 2006. There were really, iPhones didn't exist, but there were flip phones then. And we were 15 people, and eventually we grew to over 150 when we exited. We were the first company to put ads on mobile phones. That is pretty easy to understand what that is. We had a really unique solution that allowed us to build an automated ad platform that provided for very accurate targeting to the owners or users of those phones, so we can publish really relevant ads. And of course, everybody knows the mobile ad market is not huge, so there was a big opportunity there, right? So the bottom line was, easy to understand, unique solution, and addressing a big market opportunity. And if you have that, then at least you have the ingredients for building something that can become a winner, as long as you can execute. If we apply that to Aperio, what do? We validate and clean industrial data, easy to understand. It's absolutely unique what we do here at Aperio. There's literally nobody else out there. There's no other solution out there in the industrial and manufacturing space that can do what we can do at scale. And obviously the market opportunity is big. Data quality is without a doubt the number one issue holding back industrial companies from realizing the full potential of data analytics and AI. So we have that in place. It's mainly then a matter of execution to create the winner. And I think that challenge is really mainly a matter of building the right team and the right team culture. So once we have the ingredients, then it's down to execution. And execution, you know, I think mostly it's about finding the right people, building the right teams. So that's how I spend most of my time. And yeah, I mean, I think of all the projects I've been involved in startups throughout my career, I believe Perios probably has the biggest potential because the data quality problem we solve is such a massive and pervasive problem in the industry. And we have a clear category leadership with a unique solution. So yeah, it's got all the right ingredients. And yeah, we're getting close to having the right team in place as well. So hopefully this will be another winner.
Well, we're counting on it being so. So you warm my heart when you say this will be the biggest win you've had, because yeah, that comes off of a pretty high hurdle based on your earlier wins. So let's jump on into Appiro. You describe Appiro as ensuring sensor data quality for critical infrastructures and large-scale industrial facilities. What does that actually mean?
Well, so there's a lot of places where data can fail when you start from the field sensors and follow the path all the way through the analytics engines. And what Appiro does is, and what it means is that we help identify these issues in the data flow throughout all the systems that the data passes through, and issues in the data itself by identifying gaps in data or anomalies in the data stream. So at the end of the day, right, it's not only about having data, it's about having data that you can trust. And Appiro makes sure that you have data that you can trust. That is the, in essence, what we do and what Appiro means.
Now, no small achievement in there, or no small challenge, I should say, that you guys work toward. So according to McKinsey, poor data quality is a consistent roadblock for the highest value AI use cases in industrial customers with asset-intensive operations, i.e. where Momenta likes to invest. So how do you help address this?
Yeah, so McKinsey, you're right, published an article in early 2023. Very good for us, actually. I mean, validated really well what we do. They concluded that poor data quality is a consistent roadblock to realizing the value of industrial AI. So yeah, great validation for Appiro, but there's a lot more out there in the industry. For example, it's been estimated that 80% of industrial data goes unused because of poor data quality. In fact, most of our customers tell us that they spend most of their data analytics budgets on data validation and data cleansing. They spend their money on validating data rather than spending their money on analyzing data and making business decisions out of the data. So there's definitely a lot of industry attention to the issue. There's plenty of money being spent towards solving this issue. So how can Appiro help? Where we help in a unique way is that we solve that data quality problem automatically and at scale, and there's no other solution that can do that. So basically, data volumes, as you know, are growing pretty much exponentially. I mean, every year there's more data created than was created in the history of all the previous years. And this data, right, is being made available and becomes the basis for making business critical decisions. And the volumes are so large now, so it's not feasible anymore to use manual efforts, or in the case of McKinsey, even to hire consultants to validate data and remediate data quality issues. That only works when you're talking about thousands of data streams, but now most industrial companies start dealing with millions of data streams and the negative consequences of making decisions based on poor data are really much greater. So that's really where Appiro helps and how we help address this problem McKinsey is talking about, which is that, you know, we solve these data quality issues automatically and at scale. And that's really the differentiator and how we stand out.
So to put a point on this, can you tell us about some of your notable wins with clients?
Yeah, I mean, so really both in terms of who we've been able to, you know, work with and the kinds of issues that we've been able to address, right? So, I mean, you know, we were fortunate enough to work with some of the, you know, the real industry leaders early on in our journey. I always say we punched above our weight a little bit, you know, in the early days before we were funded and before we had a complete product, because we started off kind of like targeting these global 500, Fortune 500 type customers. And that led us to the opportunity to be working with some of those largest industrial organizations in the world, like Covestro, Chevron, you know, Air Liquide, the French gas company, National Grid, you know, and others, right? And a few that we can't mention. But the fact is that when I'm working with some of these real industry leaders who are willing to partner with a small startup and go through sort of like the patience of working with a company that's not quite there yet in terms of maturity. Now we are, but back then we weren't. And that really speaks volumes to the size of the problem and the, you know, like the importance of the problem that we're trying to help solve. So we work with really interesting industrial companies like that. And when it comes to the types of issues that we help companies address, I mean, that really ranges from the tactical stuff. So like we work with a customer that where we started loading up all their data streams into our system. As soon as we did that, they discovered major configuration mistakes that they've done in their databases and their historians that allow them to take action and solve that and solve some really big data analytics problems for them. So we have a fairly short time to value where we deploy and focus on a specific use case and we help somebody make a better data analytics decision or find some bad sensors or broken systems pretty quickly. So those are sort of like the everyday wins, you know, that we encounter. But I think by and large, the fact that we've been able to earn the confidence by some of these large industrial companies is really cool.
You know, if this conversation had been a year ago, all of those wins would have been certainly valuable to their industries. But I think everything related to AI, industrial AI in particular, has taken a huge step up, of course, because of the interest in generative AI, Gen AI as called, or ChatGPT. To what degree do you see Gen AI impacting industrial systems and probably more importantly, Aperio?
Well, I think my answer is not much different from most others, right? Gen AI is going to be disruptive to everything. It's going to disrupt the space we're in. It's going to disrupt everything that we touch across the board. It's just kind of like a matter of how and when. So the way I look at that is there will be many new winners that are created as a result of generative AI, and those are the ones that pay attention to Gen AI, and there will be a lot of losers, and those are the ones that don't. So we have to pay attention to that. That said, there's no reason to jump headfirst into Gen AI and latch onto that without a plan. So what we have done is we continue to execute the path that we're on, but we've been proactive with our system and the architecture we're building to make sure that it's flexible and ready to integrate a generative AI layer when we need to. The interesting thing about Aperio is that just like AI in general, generative AI also craves quality data. So you can see how what Aperio does becomes even more important because of generative AI, because generative AI by and large can drive the consumption of even larger amounts of data and make bigger decisions based on this data. So if we use generative AI directly here at Aperio, I think it can drastically improve our opportunity and on our product as well. So yeah, we see generative AI as a driver of more demand for quality data, but also as a potential tool that we can use to improve our own product. And we're certainly thinking about that, and we're certainly setting up the architecture to be ready for that, but we're stopping short from jumping straight into it without a solid plan. That's how we think about it.
Yeah, well said. It's interesting, our investment thesis for Aperio. I think one of our partners put it best when he said, you know, in a gold rush, sell axes, picks, and jeans, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And in some sense, data quality becomes that infrastructure that enables, if you will, the rest of the gold rush. And Gen AI is simply the hype, if you will, that's really driving interest from all angles of the industry, but exposing also the big gaps in data quality or data accessibility, or to your point earlier, data usage, right? The 80%. So, so we see a lot of upside opportunity, and that was actually one of the strong points for our investment in Aperio. Let me ask, how do you know when an organization is ready to adopt Aperio? And what have you seen in terms of some of the best practices clients might use to realize the value of your systems?
Yeah, well, first of all, in terms of interest in adoption, we are at this point right now where we see a lot of excitement in the industry. We feel like the product market fit has been fairly well validated, right? There's almost a universal interest in data quality as a topic, as a problem that needs solutions. So that's good. So that's there. Then it comes kind of like, okay, adoption in a particular organization. And here, what we find is that what we look for is basically the actual end users. So we find that when the data engineers at, for example, a upstream oil company that we're working with, they get frustrated with the time it takes for them to manually mine data and make sure that the data is fit for purpose for the AI or the machine learning models that they're trying to build. And so we then get the end users or the potential end users in front of our product so they can see how more efficient they can become by using our product and our Aperio solution. And so once we get these end users excited about Aperio, we know we're in the best position to get adoption for our product in that organization. So that is sort of our best practice. If you wish, you know, it's a best practice. We focus on getting the end users committed first. We get them excited. We build on that and make them a champions of Aperio inside of their organization. And then we leverage them to get adoption. And when that happens, you know, when we have these data champions and we build those right all across the organization, I mean, we sell into fairly large companies running up and down, raving about Aperio, and they carry the Aperio champion torch, then we know that there's a readiness there to achieve, you know, adoption. And that's essentially how we also structure our sales process, really.
Well, excellent. And given that you end the note on sales, so this is the Disneyland question, of course. So you've just closed the $9 million Series A round, of course, led by Momentum, featuring some notable industry stalwarts such as Chevron and National Grid Partners. What can we expect to see from Aperio over this next year?
Execution, really. I mean, it's very simple. But, you know, by the way, first of all, it has to be said, right, that we're really proud and excited about the funding that we just now closed in August of this year. It was a bit of a challenging year to fundraise across the board, to say the least. And we ended up with an oversubscribed round with tier one investors like Momenta to have confidence and support from, you know, Momenta. And we look forward to working together to reach our next milestones. You know, by the way, it's really great for us. And also to be backed by, yeah, you mentioned some of the names, right? But to be backed by such a strong syndicate of strategic investors, National Grid and Chevron, EDP, Delek, and others. Most startups at our stage, they're not fortunate enough to have the backing of this caliber of investors that we do now, especially not in a year like this. And there is no doubt that this is going to materially impact our future success. So, well, thank you, first of all, for the confidence that you put in us. But also, I mean, it's really great to be in this position and have backing from this type of syndicate. So that said, next year for us, it's going to be all about continue to focus on team building. I mean, I think I said before, building the right team, getting the right team culture is a never-ending project and has to be worked on all the time as the market evolves and as the company evolves. Next year is going to have a strong focus on customer needs at the center. I've always been one to say that the customer comes first and we're more successful if we always think about putting the customer in the center and first. So, I mean, we have a unique solution already. We have a big market opportunity. We're convinced we have the best investors. So next year is going to be pretty simple. You know, just try to keep building a great product and keep signing up customers and provide the best customer support that we can. I think it's really as simple as that. Obviously not simple to do, but conceptually straightforward. And it keeps us focused as well. Several companies ago, by the way, I worked with somebody, Maria Serino, is an investor in one of my companies, and actually way back when, she was also my boss and the CEO and of the company I worked for, Gardant. She always was a bit of a, you know, mentor to me, and she said many things, some things that stuck more than others. And one thing she said to me many years ago was, Jonas, don't think too much about strategy and this and that. Just focus on getting another purchase order, and then you get another purchase order, and then another one, and the rest, it's going to work itself out. So that's really how I think about next year. Signing up customers, get more purchase orders. That will drive the company to step up and deliver, you know, for these customers, and success is going to follow off of that. So that's what you'll see from Aperio next year.
Formulaic. And yeah. That only works when you've got the track record to endear the trust of people around you that your formula is the right one. And clearly you've got the track record. So it's interesting, as you said, in this funding, you know, the very challenging funding year, we have found constantly companies that we've been, you know, either leading the investment or participating in, where we have had to almost beat off sometimes a strategic investors because the round's fully subscribed at that point, right? And in this case, it was you probably had the most stellar group of investors that wanted to come in at the very last minute.
Yeah.
When, as they say, when the herd started to move, right?
Yeah, then they're all count. Yeah, it was good.
Yeah. Yeah, it was great to see. So
I mean, it's exciting, you know, it's really inspiring for sure.
Yeah. So in closing, I always like to ask, where do you find your personal inspiration?
Yeah, you, a lot of people read a lot. A lot of people listen to podcasts and have certain people they look up to and such. And I mean, I do too, but I thought about this question a little bit and I thought I'd give it a bit of a more of a personal answer or more on a personal note. And I find my inspiration to a large degree in food, actually. I mean, when you and I met, you know, I think we talked a little bit about that, actually. I enjoy food and I enjoy cooking food. And it really started as a result of one of my kids having severe food allergies, life-threatening food allergies to a lot of things, which really limited what he could eat. So, you know, I thought I'd be damned if I wasn't going to be able to fix that problem and give this kid some access to great food like other kids have. So, in a way, it's like full circle, right? It's like how I started this discussion. I'm really attracted to building new things and learning hard things. And cooking for me became exactly that. So that's how it started. I mean, what do I read? Cookbooks is the answer, or cooking, right? And this became a thing in my family. And this has really been kind of what my family and I spend our time doing. All my family, both my kids and my wife, you know, were sort of like foodies in a way. We spend a large amount of time together on the weekends cooking, food projects all the time. And so, yeah, that's where I find my inspiration. And that's how I spend a lot of my time. And that's really kind of like where I come back to as well. I mean, in the startup world, you know, you work a lot, to say the least, and it's a lot of pressure. It's a lot of stress. And at the end of the day, when you need something else to do to take your mind off of that and get some relaxation, then cooking is where I go. And I engage my family in that almost every weekend as well.
You've done very well on our bookend questions. I always like open-ended questions because you learn so much more about a person based on how they answer those. And so all of you who are fans of the podcast know our opening question, our closing question are truly open-ended because I love the surprise of never knowing where somebody's going to come back with an answer. So you hit it on both ends there, Jonas. Nice job.
I hope so.
Yeah. Well, thank you for sharing this time and these wonderful insights with us today, Jonas.
Thanks for having me, Ken. It was a pleasure. I look forward to working with you more. Getting milestone here, you know.
Yeah, no, as well. I love the capital E on execution. So we're looking forward to being part of that. This has been Jonas Elgren, CEO of Appirio, the industry leader in data quality solutions. Thank you for listening, and please join us for the next episode of our Digital Thread podcast series. We wish you a momentous day. You've been listening to the Momenta Digital Thread podcast series. We hope you've enjoyed the discussion, and as always, we welcome your comments and suggestions. Please check our website at momenta.one for archived versions of podcasts, as well as resources to help with your digital industry journey. Thank you for listening.